Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud is brought to you by Academy for Educators, online professional development for teachers and leaders, online courses, modules, and micro-credential programs for teachers to enhance their skill sets. Now featuring the instructional coaching micro-credential, including 5 online modules framed around the work of Steve Barkley. Learn, grow, inspire. AcademyForEducators.org.
Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. On today's podcast, we are going to be talking about instructional coaching and the work of instructional coaches. And especially a focus on new instructional coaches getting started. I am joined today with folks from the Northern Valley Schools who are planning to run a coaching academy this summer. So we're recording some information that they'll be able to use in their training this summer. So ladies, would you take a moment and introduce yourselves, a statement or two about your roles there, and then tell folks a little bit about your plan for the Coaching Academy.
I'm Jenny Sanande. I am the Supervisor of Professional Learning for the Northern Valley Schools. We conduct professional learning for 8 school districts that feed into our regional high schools here in Northern New Jersey. And part of what we do is also we manage a group of instructional coaches that are trained through our Coaching Academy, and they go out and support coaches in the different districts that we work with.
I'm Kelly Stevens. I'm the Supervisor of Curriculum and Instruction in one of our ascending districts in Demarest, and I'm also a staff developer here for Northern Valley. And part of my job is also overseeing, along with Amy, who will introduce herself in a minute, the pre-K to 8 instructional coaching leaders that we have.
Hi, I'm Amy Brown, and I'm one of the staff developers here at Northern Valley, and I also work as a literacy specialist in one of the ascending districts. Kelly and I manage the instructional coaches that go out and work with our K-8 teachers, and will also be a part of the Training Academy this summer.
Terrific. Well, I thought I'd kick this off with a look at defining instructional coaching. And it needs to be defined in each setting. It needs to be defined frequently with the district, as well as with the building administrator and the instructional coach together. And then that message needs to be clearly presented to the staff at a school. I find a good starting point is this continuum that I've created on evaluation, supervision, mentoring, and coaching. So taking a look at the continuum, if you consider that evaluation is all the way over on that left-hand side, and when an evaluation is occurring, someone is coming into my classroom, they're observing me, and they're making a judgment about my work based on some outside criteria. So most often that criteria is brought into the classroom by the observer. So in some of the places I work, it could be statewide criteria that have been adopted. It could be within the district. It could be a negotiated piece with the teachers' organization in the district. But in the evaluation piece, the teacher is being judged against that criteria that's coming in from the outside. When you go all the way to the opposite end of the continuum and you get to peer coaching, now in peer coaching, the teacher is totally in charge. So in peer coaching, the teacher's deciding who's coming into my classroom, when are they coming into my classroom, and what's the purpose for being in my classroom. So if you think of those two ends of the continuum, it's totally outside on the evaluation, totally in the teacher's control in peer coaching. I stick supervision then in the middle. And people who work as supervisors frequently have this balancing job of having to work on both sides of the continuum. And most building administrators see their job in that supervision spot. So as building principals, sometimes I'm doing an evaluation of a teacher. At other times, I could be providing coaching to the teacher. And depending on the relationships we develop, the teacher could come and request that I work as a peer coach in her classroom, even though I'm her evaluator. Then I took the term mentoring and I stuck it in between supervision and peer coaching. In most places, people who are working with mentoring, and mentoring is usually a person with background and experience that the person they're mentoring doesn't have. So it's usually that experienced teacher mentoring a new teacher. Although, in case we're dealing with technology, then it may be the new teacher who's mentoring the experienced teacher. It's that background that they have. In most mentoring settings, the mentor does not do evaluation. And so that's why I moved mentoring to the right of supervision there on the continuum. However, in most mentoring settings, you don't have the voluntary nature that's built into peer coaching. So you show up as a new teacher and we tell you who's going to be your mentor. And you're not in a position to say that that's not who I had in mind, or to tell your administrator, I think I'll pass on the whole mentoring thing. I'm just not interested. So once it becomes a requirement, it's no longer peer coaching. Now, doesn't mean it isn't valuable and effective, but part of getting these positions to work effectively is understanding the role that different people are in. So then when I come to look at instructional coaching, I kind of phrased it this way. If I'm a building administrator, I'm responsible for the entire continuum. So as a principal, I'm responsible for the evaluation, supervision, mentoring, and coaching of teachers on my staff. And I lay that line out and suggest to your instructional coaches, they can now go back to the principal and say, now I know why you're so glad that I'm here. Because in effect, you would be responsible for carrying out that a coaching role, even if I wasn't present. So in effect, the coach is a support for that administrator's responsibility. In most of the places that I work, instructional coaches generally have what I describe as half of the continuum. So sometimes as an instructional coach, I'm peer coaching. Sometimes I'm mentoring, and I can get as close to that supervision line as you can get without touching it. my drawing there is to illustrate, it's like an open circle on a number line. You get real close to supervision, but you don't touch it, okay? If you touch it, we'd have to raise your salary because you'd have a different classification. So we're unlikely to go there with instructional coaches. So how do I know I'm peer coaching? Well, I'm peer coaching when the teacher runs into my office or classroom and says, I just got a non-English speaking student. I don't know what to do. Come on. So when the teacher's dragging you into their classroom, you're peer coaching. They're telling you when to be there. They've picked you and they're telling you what you want them to do. You fall more in that mentoring role when you're providing information to a teacher that a teacher didn't request. So perhaps the building says we're going to have a focus on how we give feedback, and the instructional coach will be visiting all of our classrooms and giving us feedback on our feedback. So I didn't necessarily invite you in, so I've kind of moved into that role. And then I describe instructional coaches get awful close to supervision anytime an administrator suggests to a teacher that she work with an instructional coach. So the administrator goes up to a teacher and says, I hear you're interested in continuous employment. The odds will go up if you'll work with the instructional coach. So now the teacher comes to the instructional coach, says, I'm here, I'd like your help. And we're not so sure they really do. We're not so sure that when they look at us, they don't even see us. They see the principal's head pop up on a stick behind us. So even though I don't have that evaluative role, the principal's evaluative role can kind of overshadow onto the instructional coach because they've made that placement. So my suggestion is that at the start of each school year, something like this continuum go up on the board at a faculty meeting, and people explain positions. So where does the instructional coach fall? Where do team leaders fall? Where does the assistant principal fall? The best way to get trust is to say what you're going to do and then do it. And too often I find people don't define it. So I have some teachers who think that the instructional coach only comes into my classroom if I request it, where the instructional coach has been given a task to go into all the classrooms. And then we have this lack of trust develop because we didn't lay out clearly the picture at the very beginning. So let me stop here for a moment and see if you've got any questions about how that applies to the instructional coaches that you're working with.
I think that one of the challenges our coaches have is when they are meant to be acting in the peer coaching role, but they are also assigned as a mentor to mentor someone. So they, as one person with another teacher, may have to fulfill both of those roles. And how do they do that best, I guess?
Well, so the best way to do it is to describe when you're playing which role.
Okay.
So if the new teacher comes and asks me to do something, I'm peer coaching. So when I go in there, I need to stay in that peer coaching role. Now, suppose I see something that as a mentor, I should be addressing. Don't do it now.
Okay.
If it's a problem, it'll still be there tomorrow. So when you got invited in to be a peer coach, stay a peer coach. Then go back later wearing the mentor hat and deal with that issue. If you do them both at the same time, that's when that confusing piece sets in. And can I tell you, that's exactly the issue administrators have to deal with. A lot of administrators get into trouble because they try to coach while they're doing the evaluation. Okay. And they're two totally different mindsets for the teacher to be in during that time.
I just wanted to ask a question, actually, just as a follow-up as what you said before. So in our coaching model, our instructional coaches are right now mainly housed in different buildings and in different schools than the people that they coach. They may not be teaching at the same grade level, somewhere in the K-8, you know, role. We try to put them somewhat, you know, elementary together and middle together. But the teachers meet with their instructional coach definitely two times. They, you know, the coach reaches out with an email and they do have some discourse. Some people talk on the phone, but for the most part, they really only see each other face-to-face for those two visits. Do you have any suggestions for us as far as how to encourage our coaches to develop the relationship just to kind of foster more of that true peer feeling with the coaching?
Yeah, I hope that'll come out in this next piece.
Okay.
It has to be clear that they're working for the teacher when they go.
That
coming in from the outside is tough. Because if they were in the building, what I would suggest is that the first thing they do is invite the teacher to coach them first. You know, like when I'm building a mentor program, I always build that in, that the first thing the mentor does is have the beginning teacher come into the mentor's classroom and coach the mentor. So the mentor gives them something specific to look at and collect the feedback on so they can model that behavior. In your case, what I'd be real clear on, and I should model this when we do our role play. Kelly, let's role play it that way. But that the teacher is setting the purpose of the observation and getting the value from it, and the coach is working for the teacher. Will that fit with yours?
Yes.
Your coaches aren't sent in with an agenda.
No.
Our coaches are usually sent in, and the first visit is supposed to be a scripted lesson.
Well, but
in terms of teachers.
Okay, but what's the teacher looking to get from the scripted lesson?
I think insight into how they pose their questions, and insight into if they're calling out certain students and how often.
So the key will be in the pre-conference that they establish that the teacher's in charge. So by the time I finish the pre-conference, the teacher has told me the feedback she wants from the
school. I think that's going to be helpful to us, because I don't know that that's always been taking place per se. I think it's kind of just been an explanation. And when we meet with everybody at the Coaching Academy, and when we train new teachers that are new to Northern Valley in the summer over 3 days, I think we can do a better job of setting that up based on what you've said here. Thank you.
All right. I'd like to jump now into looking at the outcome of coaching, the purpose of instructional coaching. And here's where I work with my backwards planning model, because coaching must pay off in student achievement. We can't justify the time and the cost of a coaching program unless it shows up in student learning. So I find the best way to do that is to work backwards. So if we begin by first identifying what's the impact on student learning we're looking to gain from this. So that can be a school-wide focus on an area of improvement that the school is looking for. It could come out of a professional learning community that's focused on something. And it can be the individual teacher who says, here's the change in impact on students that I'm looking to gain. And then I found the big missing piece for this is that people historically said, okay, here's the student outcome I want to get. And the thing they did next was to look at what the teacher behavior was. So if here's the outcome, then here's what the teacher should do. And what I found they were doing is they were skipping the student behavior. So I started quite a few years ago with the statement, teachers don't cause student achievement, students cause student achievement. So the job of the teacher is to generate the student behavior that will get the learning outcome. If the teacher's causing the achievement, they're cheating. And I don't mean that literally, although it's happened in a few too many places. But I describe it, if the athletic coach causes kids to get muscles without kids working out, it's called steroids. So if the coach passes out steroids, short-term kids will get muscles, but long-term the whole thing crashes. So steroids are when teachers get focused on the outcome and they give kids shortcuts or tips and skip the kids doing the depth of work that kids need to do. So I used the example of being in an elementary class and the teacher had pulled the kids around a flip chart and they were creating a chart on what do we know about subtraction. And this little boy said, the bigger number is always on top. And the teacher wrote that down and I was wondering to myself, it'd be interesting to see how she unpacks that at a second grade level. And it didn't get unpacked. It stayed up there. And I went up to the teacher afterwards and I said, you know, I'd like to show you my checkbook. At least twice last year, I had the bigger number on the bottom. And I thought the bank wouldn't be able to subtract, but they did. Now, the problem is that's a steroid because it works at second grade. So now I got a second grader who gets a sheet with 5 word problems on it. They see that little word subtraction up at the top, and they may not even read the problems. They'll look down the page, pull out the bigger number, put it on top, smaller one, subtract. They get it back with a big smiley gram. Teacher checks off mastery of subtraction. And 5 years later in 7th grade, I've got a math teacher pulling the hair out of her head because the kid got there on steroids instead of the student work. So I struggled with this for a while, and you'll find a slide there that talks about student outcome behaviors and student production behaviors. So outcome behaviors are the behaviors that tell you you've mastered the standard. So here's what a student's writing looks like at the mastery level. Here's what the student is able to communicate on an exam at the mastery level. That's my outcome behavior. My production behavior is what do the kids do when they don't have the outcome behavior that gets them the outcome behavior. So for example, I'm working with a new teacher and I'll say, tell me the most important thing you need kids to do during the lesson today. And the teacher will say, I need kids to understand. And as soon as she says that, I kind of call a timeout, okay? Understanding is the outcome. So kids are walking in the door not understanding. You want them to walk out the door understanding. What I want to understand is what will kids do during the period that will cause them to understand. That's what my student production behavior is. Once I know the student production behavior, now I'm ready to look at the teacher behavior. And the purpose of the teacher behavior is to generate the student behavior. So the big switch that this has caused in me is, if you were working with me 25 years ago, I was big on going into teachers' classrooms, observing teachers, and giving teachers feedback on what the teacher did. Today, 90 plus percent of the time I'm in the classroom, I'm watching the kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving the teacher feedback on what the kids did. Because the reality is, if the kids were doing the behaviors that are going to cause learning, I don't care what the teacher's doing. And if the teacher is implementing what we've chosen as a district, as our procedure, as our format, and it's not causing the student behavior that's going to produce the teacher learning or the student learning, then I need the teacher to change. So most of my coaching time today is spent observing kids and giving that feedback to the teacher. If the kids are doing what the learning production behavior is, then I might want to consider, I wonder what it is the teacher's doing that's helping or supporting that. Okay. Mm-hmm. If the kids aren't doing the learning production behaviors, then I might be considering what the teacher might change in order to get those appropriate learning behaviors. So real clear for me in my conversations is, I'm not coming as a coach to change teacher behaviors. I'm coming as a coach to change student behaviors. Mm-hmm. Now, it's unlikely the student behaviors are going to change without the teacher behavior changing. But the reason the teacher is changing her behavior is not because she's doing something wrong, but what she's now doing isn't getting the student behaviors. My example of this is, years ago, I used to come to a district and I'd ask to see their evaluation instrument, and I'd look at it and I'd laugh, and they'd say, "Why are you laughing?" And I said, I kind of think that you might be able to evaluate teachers on days that kids aren't here. Because it was basically a teacher performance. Mm-hmm. So today I laugh and I say, today you can evaluate teachers on days that the teacher isn't there. Mm-hmm. And I said that, and the next break, an administrator came up to me and he said, "I just did that last week." I said, "What?" He said, "It was a half hour into first period, and a substitute came running into my office apologizing for getting lost trying to find the school. And that's the first we realized we didn't have a teacher down in the classroom." So I grabbed the sub by the hand, went running down there. It was a high school STEM class. They came running into the class, and here were the students sitting in small groups around the room working on a project. Mm-hmm. And the principal said, I looked around the room and there were two kids up at the teacher's desk. So I marched right up there and said, "And just what do the two of you think you're doing?" And with that, the student looked up and said, "She was absent yesterday. I'm going over the teacher's notes so she knows what to do." Principal said, "I just looked at him," said, "Okay." He said he walked right back to his office, sat down, and knocked out the best teacher evaluation the teacher ever got, sent it to her at home. So she's at home sick, and up pops, "You got evaluated today." Okay. And his reasoning was, without being there, she had all the critical student production behaviors that were necessary. So any questions on how you see that backwards plan fitting in with the purpose and the outcome of coaching?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I think it's great, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think, to a certain extent, as a new teacher comes in and expects to have an instructional coach, it kind of helps them take the spotlight off of themselves when they feel like, oh gosh, someone's coming in, because they don't know everything yet and they're new to everything. So they feel like, okay, cool. They're not coming in to watch me, because that's what makes a lot of people, get sticky and feel really panicked about things. So no, they're coming in to watch the students, because I can't possibly watch all 22 at the same time. And they're going to give me the feedback so that I can help all these students progress and achieve what they need to achieve. I think it's a really nice way to frame it.
So the bottom line that I lay out as our goal, our goal is that we want the largest number of kids spending the greatest amount of time engaged in the most appropriate learning production behavior. So if you think about an elementary teacher who's working with a small group in a reading lesson, has kids off at centers, has kids working independently at their seats, to have a coach come in and identify how many students spent how much of that 90-minute reading block engaged in the most appropriate learning production behavior. So those two kids over in the corner were quiet and they didn't interrupt me, but we just had 20 minutes that I don't think anything was occurring that was increasing their reading. And that's powerful for a coach to now assist a teacher, especially a new teacher, in what changes he or she might want to make.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.